Welcome back into another edition of the KSO Show. Mason Voth, Derek Young with you as we get set on this Wednesday to go over everything that the head man for the Wildcats said in his Tuesday press conference. Chris Klieman talking to the media after the Wildcats 44-31 win over UCF. I always appreciate that K-State does their media stuff on Tuesdays as opposed to Mondays like some do, because I always wonder, so close to the game, what can you really get that you didn't get after the game? I think this about NFL teams too. Like NFL teams that played on Sunday and then Monday afternoon, the coaches are in the building and they're talking to people. It's like, well, what has changed that you're going to learn from this? So you get a little bit of an extra cushion there with Chris Klieman. He comes in, he's got the full perspective. Maybe we all have the full perspective now, or we think we do. And we go in there, we grill him, and we get out of there. And I'm sure a lot of people are thinking, I've listened to Chris Klieman press conferences. He does not get grilled by the K-State media. But that's for everybody else to decide. What was the number one takeaway from Chris Kleiman's comments on Tuesday for you, DY?
Yeah, going back to what you're saying, it was definitely a bye week crowd in Vineyard too. Mm-hmm. There was like, I want to say 7 or 8 of us tops. So yes. I think we got in and out in probably a shorter time than we typically do. Still got our lunch, so that's good. You know, what was missing in that intro, and you said you have, is the Randon Plattner tackle. Because Chris Klieman actually touched on that, because he joked with Randon Plattner, the long snapper, because he was one of the few that was not tricked by the whole punt return formation, the trick play that UCF tried to deploy. And maybe it goes for a good chunk there, 15 or 20 yards, if not for Randon Plattner, who sniffed it out the entire time, which if you know him or know of him, that probably doesn't surprise you. But Klieman said he joked with him. He's like, hey, it's your first big-time tackle of your entire career. obviously, for a long snapper, that's not surprising. And he said, Plattner said, whoa, no. I had one last year against Iowa State, too. So don't remember that myself.
Hey, look at this. Look at who's on top of it right here. I have the video right here for you. If you're watching it, you can see it in action on the YouTube. If you're listening, DY is getting a look right now at the punt return that was mentioned and what took place with it.
And Randon Plattner, and it looks like Bo Palmer, were very much the only two that knew that trick play was unfolding.
So, you got a little Randon Plattner action with the tackle and big play there that he had go on. So, that was good for what took place for the Wildcats there. But, one thing that I took away from what Chris Klieman said on Tuesday, you know, we're trying to figure out everything that's going on. He talked a little bit about injuries and getting some guys back. And of importance, there were three pass catchers that came up in this. RJ Garcia, who played a little bit in the game, but not even a noticeable amount, was dinged up. Seems like he'll be ready and good to go by the time they face Oklahoma State. And then there was the hope that Keegan Johnson and Garrett Oakley would be at the level that they want those guys to be at when they are able to go to Stillwater. Maybe getting the type of player that they expected to have that they really haven't seen through the first 4 weeks of the season. And why I bring that up and why it's so interesting to me is because, as we've talked about, my player grades on the last episode of the KSO show and where some people fall on those is, look, I think Will Howard and the receivers both deserve some blame for the misconnections on Saturday against UCF. Like, yes, Will Howard could have been a little bit better, probably could have been a little bit sharper. There is no doubt about that in my eyes. But what I go in there and see with the way things work out is I think there's an element to this that's on the coaching staff too, because you're the ones that are putting the players on this team. And I was interested in looking at this because it feels like K-State has some of the smaller receivers in the Big 12. Here's a little fact for you, DY. Average height of the top four receivers on each Big 12 team. So I went through, and if you were a wide receiver, I took the top four guys in terms of production so far this season, and I took the average height of those players. Any guesses on who has the tallest receivers in the Big 12 right now?
Probably Texas or Oklahoma.
Texas and Oklahoma, fifth and sixth. If you want to be technical, Texas is tied for third on the average base. Houston is number one of all teams at 74.25 inches. So that works out to averaging. Their receivers are, again, on average, 6'2 or taller. The way that that works out, a little over 6'2 is the average. KU is second on the list. They're at 73.75 inches, so they're just under that. And that would make sense to a lot of people that have seen KU. They've got some pretty tall receivers. You have to go all the way down to the bottom and find the Wildcats. They are dead last in average height of receivers at 71.25. So, I mean, the way that works out, K-State and TCU are the only two teams in the Big 12 that their top four receivers are on average under 6 foot. And K-State also is one of only four teams to have a top four receiver that is under 5'10", obviously that being Phillip Brooks, and he is their leading receiver out of the wideouts. So when you think about the throws that Will Howard is having to make to some of these guys, he doesn't have the luxury of the size of target that others have. I mean, honestly, that's probably why his connection with Ben Sinnott is so strong. That's his biggest target out there that he can hit. Sinnott has the reach to make some more plays. There's a little bit more wiggle room for where that ball is going. Now, it's not always the same type of route and movement that the receivers are having, but a throw can be a little bit offline. It doesn't have to be so precise, where that's kind of the thing with like the Jaden Jackson stuff that took place down the field. That ball had to be precise. There was a ball to Phillip Brooks early in the game to the corner of the end zone that like maybe should have had it, but that ball has to be right on the money to get a ball to Phillip Brooks in the end zone, because he's 5'8". He is the shortest of the contributing receivers in the Big 12 currently. Brennan Presley at O State is also 5'8". But then there's only two other guys that are below 5'10". So that is something that is interesting to me. And I think, K-State needs to find a way to get these receivers more involved, find a way to get them open more, because you can throw them open, but once they get that tiny bit of separation, there is a much lesser chance that the Wildcats are going to have success throwing the ball than other teams in the league. Because say you are Quinn Ewers and you're throwing to somebody like Xavier Worthy or, you know, whoever else on their team. I think Texas's tallest receiver is Adonai Mitchell, who comes in at 6'4". You've got a little bit more room for error if you're Quinn Ewers throwing a little touchy ball to Mitchell than Will Howard does if he's going to Phillip Brooks. Same type of deal if you're Jalen Daniels and you're throwing to Quentin Skinner, who's 6'5". Like, all these other guys seem to have options. The options for K-State, their tallest receiver that they put on the field right now is Jaden Jackson.
Yeah, I mean, having a bit larger catch radius always makes things a little bit easier for a quarterback. That's why, you know, NFL teams look for that, and it's part of the assessment when you're looking at hand sizes and height and all that when it comes to catch radius. In terms of like a combine type thing, it's something that is measured because it is important. At the same time, that's part of it. I think it's a good point to raise, something that I probably glossed over and maybe I shouldn't have. At the same time, there is also cases where there is enough separation for Will Howard to connect on, and it isn't happening just yet. And there was a couple of times where I think he had a guy where he's been overthrowing them by a touch is what it seems like the most. And some of that could also be like, hey, well, let's get some better ball skills in here. And some of that is, you know, we'd rather underthrow a guy than overthrow a guy. And you got to be conscious of that. If you're Will Howard, the Garrett Oakley one along the east sideline comes to mind in that regard, when he's running all alone. So there's multiple culprits of this issue. And it just comes down to everyone just being a tick off. And you would think with more time, they'll get that tick on. You know what I mean? So I'm not terrified about it, but it is something that needs to be addressed. And it is correctable because there are opportunities there. The receivers are producing some of those opportunities. Their consistency also isn't there. Not just from a vertical standpoint. But we're talking about the Chris Klieman press conference, and he mentioned we need to get some of these guys maybe more of a free release. That's because they're not winning at the top of the route. They're not winning off the line of scrimmage. Some of these guys, because of size, to your point, are getting roughed up a little bit at the line of scrimmage, not getting off the ball well enough. A corner can be really physical. They had that problem against Missouri. You get man coverage, and some of those Missouri corners were bigger, faster, stronger, were just able to get into them and knock them off the route. So then you're not running a precise route where your timing is affected too, because there isn't that physicality or strength that they need at the position. They are probably lacking that component. So I thought that was actually one of the more, not a seminal, a critical moment when Chris Klein said we need some free releases, because I think that is at least acknowledging that maybe at the line of scrimmage, there's some things that aren't going well.
And that's kind of what I was trying to get at too, with what I think of the receivers is there are things that need to be done for them to be in a position where they are more open. Like, yes, by what we expect of good quarterbacks, Jaden Jackson was open. Phillip Brooks was open. Some of these guys were open on Saturday, but it wasn't to the extent that we see with a lot of other teams in the Big 12 to this point this year, where there is, you know, there's plenty of room of separation. It's not just, okay, you got by him a little bit. Will Howard has to drop this ball in the bucket here. You know, give Will Howard a barrel to drop the ball in, not a bucket to drop it in. And you look at what K-State did, like they only had one play to a receiver that went more than 15 yards on Saturday, 16-yard pass to Seth Porter. That's not another 5'8 guy. That's not going to get the job done. Every other play through the air that went more than 15 yards on Saturday for K-State, 22 to Ben Sinnott, 24 to DJ Giddens, 22 to DJ Giddens, and 16 to DJ Giddens. So it's not great. And I think that's why Chris Klieman is looking at it, and he knows that this team is going to need to have plays down the field to have success as they move forward, because not only is it just something that you need to have in your repertoire, but you also are going to need to be able to have those types of plays for momentum, to score quickly, because you are going to come to a point where you can't just always say, hey, we're going to, you know, take as much time as we need to get down the field. We can't always have an 11-play drive to score a touchdown. Sometimes we're going to need to do it in three or four plays.
And to your point, like nothing there even got to 20 yards. And when it got close to it, or maybe it did get over 20 yards, yards after the catch were a pretty big characteristic of that. So, yes, there. We saw the two or three that Will Howard missed, but that's two or three in how many balls did he throw, right?
He threw 42 passes and he had 15 incompletions.
Yeah, so there's 82 freaking plays for Kansas State. He threw 42 passes. We're sealing out the two or three that he probably missed on, the one to Oakley, the one to Jackson, maybe the one to Brooks. I get it. That's three of the 42. There's 15 incomplete passes. If you only have two or three chances at those to get vertical, then your receivers and tight ends probably aren't doing enough too.
Yeah. Yep. We'll have to see kind of where things end up going on and how it happens. I know real quick, just to shout it out on here, Freak on KSU Freak on the message board, he was going through and he was like charting the misses and he was trying to go through and like, okay, here's where you can kind of put it down and how you try and I think that's the way you have to do it. Like, it's all case by case. There are throws that Will missed, but also go and look at the throws that he did make in the game. And I think that's something that gets overlooked, because they weren't the big plays that went 25 yards for a touchdown. He threw some really tight balls, and they were really good to pick up first downs or keep a drive alive.
There was some really nice tight window throws. He made the correct decision on all the read action plays, whether to give or take. He probably got them out of – I can remember when I was watching, probably out of six or seven bad plays into good ones. I think two of them went for touchdowns. So there's a lot that maybe not to insult anyone's intelligence here, but there's a lot that maybe an average fan doesn't see that Will Howard is doing as well, that is very conducive to winning football. But, and this is what we have, because the pass explosiveness on defense is not great for the Wildcats in their favor. Pass explosive on offense is not great for Kent State in your favor. This is probably the microcosm of it all. And by the way, both sides, correctable, fixable. I think they're going to get there and be fine. It's going to take some time. UCF, average yards of completion, almost 19 yards of completion. Almost. Yep. It was 18.9. Kansas State, 9.4.
Yeah. Yeah. No, it's.
Now, if Will Howard hits two or three ones that we're talking about, yeah, that number goes up. But guess what? You can't. I mean, Quinn Ewers is not 100% on every deep ball. They're deep balls. They're harder to connect on. Yeah. Now, there's a few that there's enough separation there, and they need to be connected. I get it. But you need to have more than two or three chances, too.
Yeah, and part of it would be the hope that some of this stuff evens out and that this early. Yeah, you get Keegan Johnson healthy, you see what happens. Because right now, I mean, you are basically relying on Phillip Brooks to be your number one receiver, and that's just not the type of guy he's ever going to be. Like, you know, the deep balls down the field, it's not his thing. And so you need Keegan Johnson to be that guy. We'll wait and see if he ends up being healthy enough to actually do that and if he can execute when he does get to that health. All right, moving on to some of the other things that Chris Klieman mentioned. He did also bring up Trayshon Ward and his injury status. He should be good to go by the Oklahoma State game, it sounds like. Any other really notable things off the top that were like headline news that Chris Klieman had to say today in his press conference?
Trayshon Ward back, RJ Garcia back. I thought, and this is me being essentially reading body language and being like a psychologist in that, and tone and everything. So this is pure speculation. I thought he sounded the most upbeat and I guess positive about the Keegan Johnson situation in a while. That was my assessment.
That's probably good. I mean, we saw a lot more Keegan Johnson. We saw him earlier in the game on Saturday. They tried to get him involved. And so I think with that time off, there's reason to be optimistic about what he can do and go out and accomplish against Oklahoma State, which, you know, I keep bringing it up, and this is probably why Chris Klieman is also optimistic about it. Like, if you look back at what happened this weekend, Oklahoma State let Rocco Becht throw the ball as well as he's ever done and probably as well as he ever will do, at least this season, because Becht had not been very good for Iowa State as the season went on. Now, he's a freshman, but – Here's what Rocco Becht did in the first handful of games of the year. 10 of 13 for 113 against Northern Iowa. 23 of 44, 203 yards against Iowa. 17 of 24 for 233, two picks against Ohio. But then against Oklahoma State, he goes 27 of 38, 348 yards, and three touchdowns in the game. Iowa State was able to throw the ball around and put up some points on Oklahoma State, and that's not typically something that you do. And the Cyclones had three different receivers have plays of 20 yards or greater, including Jalen Noel, who had 38, had a long of 38 yards, and then Daniel Jackson had a 29-yard grab. So there is the opportunity for some downfield work against this Oklahoma State defense that K-State's going to face coming out of the bye week.
I asked Chris Klieman the question, and I think it's a fair thing to understand here, too, that could be toying a little bit with the pass offense when it comes to explosiveness, and I still don't think it's as simple as saying, well, Howard's not good enough. I don't think he's been great at it, but I don't think he's had a lot of help, is that I do tend to think that things got a little turned upside down on him because they basically assembled an offense and a plan on that side of the ball throughout the entire offseason that were going to be centralized on considerable roles for guys like Garrett Oakley, who I think was going to play a considerable role in a double tight kind of situation with Ben Sinnott, but also Keegan Johnson is the number one receiver and probably the guy that can stretch the field the best out of everyone in the receiver room. And then, you know, a few days before the season, you find out that you're not going to have those two. So I still think that's been a limiting factor in all of this. And to put a bow on it, I will also say, as much as we're picking nits, and I think it's fair to call that in some cases, or saying we want this to be perfect, we want this to be perfect, and we want this to be perfect, just basically demanding perfection from every facet of the Kansas State offense, I think it's fair to understand that, like, they're the number 13 offense in the country. So if it looks like this and they're still that good, I think there's worse places to be.
Yeah. And I mean, a lot of this is going to be, you're coming off of a Big 12 title. You bring back the quarterback, the offensive line, you know, one of the receivers, and then some other players that helped you do that. The expectations are high, and what people think of you are going to be graded on a much different curve now. We'll see kind of what K-State does to adjust. Special teams, we already talked about Randon Plattner and his phenomenal play earlier.
No, that might have been the only one.
Yeah, that might have been the only one. What kind of vibe did you get from Chris Klieman when it came to discussing special teams on Tuesday?
His tolerance is shortening there. Which is fair. I mean, yeah, that's a kind of special teams performance that eventually costs you a game.
Football coaches don't like to have to go in and talk about kickers.
Don't want to talk about a kicker. And this might piss some people off because they probably want him to be the most pissed about the kicker. But really what he seemed the most pissed off about were the holding penalties, which I thought one was kind of bullshit, but he seemed to think it was a good call.
Yeah. That and also, obviously, I think, you know, another area of concern is the amount of yards being given up on some of the opponent returns is a concern moving forward for K-State. Just, you know, when the defense is struggling at times, especially in the secondary, what you can't do is, instead of letting the team start at the 25, letting them move that thing up a little bit more. Or, I mean, same thing goes for the kicks out of bounds. Like, we've seen a couple of those already this year. So, I don't know, just things to kind of keep in mind.
Look, I don't kick. So maybe I'm not in a place to say how easy it is, but we know Chris Tennant has a massive freaking leg. Boot the damn thing in the end zone and call it a day.
Yeah. Yeah. It's probably, you know, just throw him at the 25, whatever, call it good. Especially since that's the likely outcome in a lot of scenarios, unless you give them an opportunity. What else from Chris Klieman was notable in your eyes and needs mentioned before we move on?
Yeah, I mean, it seems like we've probably covered it for the most part.
I mean, the last 2 weeks from Chris Klieman have not been the most enlightening experiences. Like, there hasn't been a whole lot to hit on. And this is kind of what happens when you get into, like, the flow of a season and you have a team that the glaring weaknesses are what they are. They are glaring. You know, he could go out there and he kind of did say that they need to be better with some of the downfield stuff. But are you really going to criticize Will Howard after how he played? Because there are a lot bigger fish to fry. You certainly can't say anything about the running backs. The offensive line played better, probably their best game of the season on Saturday. So it's dwindling down the things that you can really get a lot of good information out of. It's either injuries or the big things that you're not doing well. And he did talk about the defense and, again, brought up, you know, the same thing. It's like they got to be more disciplined with their eyes when they're out there. That's what happened on the trick play and some other things. They just, you know, and that's something that comes with experience for a bunch of young guys that either are young enough that they're freshmen or sophomores or they've never really played Power Five football before.
Yeah, and obviously that's guys like Marquis Siegel, Will Lee, who are transfers, junior college transfers, that haven't played Power Five football, haven't, you know, put on a Kansas State uniform until this year, really. So they're dealing with some of that. I think they're moving some pieces around, feeling it out. But again, I said this, I think, on would be yesterday's show. At the end of the day, like, there were moments in that UCF game that make you pull your hair out. But when you reflect and look at the totality of the performance, it actually wasn't bad.
Yeah. No, I would agree. I would agree with that. You look around, and this is a team that, with all the flaws, they are still in good shape. You just got to correct some things to make sure you're in even better shape and you're in the right kind of shape that you want to be in to actually compete with, you know, basically Texas right now. Like, we've identified Texas is easily the one that you have to – that you're chasing, basically. Everybody else is kind of in this same group, depending on what tier of the Big 12 you're in. You're either Texas – or the group right below that could really do something. Some teams that, hey, they're not bad, but they're also not good. And then the teams that, yeah, you are bad. And right now, unfortunately, the Big 12 has a lot of teams that are in the, yeah, you are bad category.
Yeah, the yeah, you are bad category being Oklahoma State,
Houston,
Baylor, Iowa State, Houston. Those four.
And Texas Tech is on the fringe right now. Tech
I'm still holding out hope for Texas Tech. They're in the not good, not bad category with like BYU.
Yeah.
And I guess Cincinnati. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. Cincinnati has some room to fall into that. Yeah. You're bad category.
Yeah. Cincinnati. UCF. I would say Cincinnati, Texas Tech, BYU. It's basically Tech and three of the four newcomers.
Yeah. UCF is probably like the leader of the middle of the pack there. You're not good, you're not bad. You know, they're probably the one that could move up a tier out of those guys.
Yeah. It's Tech and three of the four newcomers. And then that second tier that, like, you're good, but you're not Texas. That's like Oklahoma, K-State, TCU, and KU.
Yeah. Yeah. Looking at it, yeah. And hey, congrats to West Virginia for moving up.
Yeah. West Virginia's probably right there with BYU, UCF, Cincinnati, and Tech. Yeah, and they beat Tech. So.
Give them some props. Also, real quick, I brought up my receiver research earlier. You want to know my favorite name in out of Big 12 receivers that I came across? He plays for Houston. His name is Joseph Manjack IV.
Joseph Manjack IV. Okay, I'm a fan. Hopefully,
so it starts slow with Joseph, but it ends very strong with Manjack IV.
That's impressive to say the least. Oh, to begin the year was Neil Brown hot seat. Now, probably still hot seat, but Morgantown, he probably doesn't have to. I don't think he needs a realtor yet.
Honestly, the way that it probably is he's no longer on a very hot seat, and instead, Ren Baker, the West Virginia AD, is probably on the hot seat. You know, he just got brought in the end of last year. So every AD wants to hire their own football coach, and he's probably thinking he was going to be able to fire this guy. West Virginia fans probably still want Neil Brown to be fired because they probably don't have the confidence that he can get them to like a Chris Kleiman level, but it's probably really tough for Ren Baker right now because he's like, yeah, you know, if we get any more successful, I may not fire this guy. And if you look at what's left on their schedule, they play at Houston, they play at home against Oklahoma State, home against BYU, and home against Cincinnati. That is four very winnable games right there for West Virginia. I mean, they could get to seven wins, and that's not including a road game at Baylor, and then the other games left are at Oklahoma, at UCF, and at TCU. A legitimate chance that West Virginia wins seven games this year. In fact, book it. Seven wins, West Virginia. It's happening.
He could do – now, I'm not a proponent of this because it's a kind of a cowardly thing to do and shady in some respects. But the Kirby Hokut thing where he fired Matt Wells before he could win too many games. I think they were like 4-2 or 3-2. He's like, nope,
you're not. They went to a bowl game.
Yeah, but he fired him in the season
before
Matt Wells could get credit for those wins to put them in a bowl game. So, like, if West Virginia loses the next game, falls to 3-2, Ren Baker's like, okay, you're fired at 3-2. Because that's basically what Kirby Hokut did to Matt Wells.
Yeah. Well, it was after the K-State game. They got beat. Texas
still
Tech
still had a winning record at that point.
Texas Tech was 5-3 when they fired Matt Wells. That team went on to beat Mississippi State 34-7 in the Liberty Bowl and won seven games that season. Because so,
does Ren Baker capitalize off of a random West Virginia loss during the year? Like, that's it. That was the straw that broke the camel back.
Yeah, I would say it's going to be tough, though, because over their next three games, I realistically think that they probably go 2-1. So they're probably sitting at 6-2. And can you fire him if he drops to 6-3 after a loss at UCF? Or honestly, you could maybe get away with if they get blown out at Oklahoma or something. That's the 10th game of the year. So that might be the one to watch. But I'm looking at this. Matt Wells got fired after the loss to K-State. That dropped them down. They got beat by 1 point to the Wildcats. And we all remember that one. That was the Felix and Unike Uzoma, Uzuma, or whatever Tim Brando wanted to say in the game. That was the sack game for Felix. Yeah. Also, that was is that Cooper Beebe from Spencer Tillman when it was Tyrone Tallini on the defensive side of the ball?
That was also it. And I'll give you another Texas Tech memory. They also fired Cliff Kingsbury after losing to Kansas State.
Oh, well, there you go. And bad news for Rim Baker, the Grim Reaper, Chris Kleiman, is not on the schedule this year for wait, West Virginia. So he doesn't even get that.
Snyder. I think it was Bill Snyder, right? It would have been for Kingsbury.
Yeah, Snyder got Cliff Kingsbury. But Kleiman had that stretch, though, where he got Matt Wells. He got – who else was it that he got
Did
in there?
Did he get Gary Patterson?
Yes, he got Gary Patterson. And then there was somebody else they beat. It didn't come immediately after the game, but it certainly seemed like it was going to happen. Yeah, I don't know. It's wild. I mean, the losses were not very good, I will say that Matt Wells had accrued. They got beat by 35 to Texas, 70-35, and 52-31 by TCU. And then they blew that game against K-State. So was
David Beatty? Did he get David Beatty maybe?
Well, no, because David Beatty, he got fired before the K-State game in 2018, and they still let him coach it, and he coached scared. He coached like a guy that hadn't lost his job yet. He had nothing to lose in that game, and he coached scared.
Maybe it was Les Miles. I was thinking maybe he got a KU coach. I don't know.
Well, Les got fired in the offseason, though, because he was a naughty, naughty boy down in Baton Rouge. So I don't really know.
I can't think of who else it would have been because, I mean, Gundy hasn't – the last time he wasn't a coach at Oklahoma State was when you were in diapers.
I tell you what, if something bad happens on next Friday in Stillwater, Gundy would not get fired like that, but it might be the like final straw. It's like, okay, we have to address a problem here. Like, you know, you have some things in life where you have issues and you kind of keep like saying, hey – we need to monitor this. Like, this isn't very good. Like, we need to do something to change this. But you don't really have that big moment yet until something really major happens. And it's like, okay, we can't avoid talking about this anymore. We have to have this conversation. If K-State goes to Stillwater and wins that game, like 35-7 or 35-3, it's probably the time for, you know, everybody in Stillwater to look around and say, Mike, this isn't looking good. We might have to think about parting ways with you. So there you go.
I don't know if I'd be there yet. I don't. I know that sounds crazy, but like.
I just think the writing's on the wall.
Maybe. But after the 2021 season, like they almost went to the freaking playoff.
Yeah. But the world has changed since then, I think, in a significant way. And if there's one guy that seems like he's not up to the task to adjust to the new world we live in, it is Mike Gundy. But I don't know. We'll see. He always pulls a rabbit out of his hat. Won't be an easy one for K-State. And that all will be a topic of conversation next week as we get closer to K-State and Oklahoma State. But what we have on tap for you the rest of the week, even though there isn't a game for the Wildcats, we will be back on the YouTube and podcast platforms on Thursday. We'll discuss our Big 12 power rankings as we are one-third of the way through the season. And then on Friday, DY and I will be back. We'll have some best bets. We'll look at the rest of the Big 12 and kind of where that leaves things moving forward for K-State. And then a normal Sunday show. And then we'll be back, you know, all next week getting ready for the Cats and the Pokes. But that will do it for DY and I here today. Thanks for joining us on K-State Online. Be sure to get subscribed to the YouTube and podcast platforms. And if you are not joining us over on Three with all the great written work at K-State Online and access to the premium message boards, you are missing out because there's a lot of great things that go on there. A lot that has to do with K-State, some that doesn't have to do with K-State, but it still may catch your eye. So be sure in any way that you can or want to be a part of K-State Online. And we will be back with more content for you here on Thursday.